Good afternoon. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Tuesday, March 29th, 2016. If you're joining us off-net or online, this is the Senate Finance Committee. We're meeting in Juneau, Alaska, room 532, the Senate Finance Committee room. I'm Senator and Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this afternoon, Co-Chairman Kelly. Welcome.
Hello.
Senator Hoffman.
Good afternoon.
Senator Olson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman.
Senator Dunleavy. Senator Bishop.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Michicki.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
We have a full complement to conduct business today. Before the committee will be SB 207, PERS and Teachers Employer Retirement, SB 208, Eliminate Alaska Performance Scholarship, SB 209, PERS Employer Contributions, SB 210, Community Revenue Sharing Property Tax Exemptions. It's the Chair's intention not to move any of these bills, but to introduce the bills, have brief conversations. We are awaiting Buck's actuary analysis, which is required by Alaska state statute. So we'll be waiting for Buck to send us models on the PERS and TERS portion of the bills and those that are affected. Senator Kelly, would you lead us off with some opening comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, at the beginning of the year, we announced how we were going to approach the budget. And one of the things that we mentioned was that we would have a suite of bills that would act in conjunction with the budget. And for those of you who are following the operating budget process, there was a $100 million unallocated reduction in there. It is possible that at the end of the day that $100 million will remain, but it is our hope that these bills, among some other bills, will cover that unallocated reduction or a portion of it. So we have introduced bills that will reduce Medicaid expense, and the crime bill is now going through our committee, and these bills have dollar amounts attached to them as well. Obviously, the state is in pretty difficult times. There are some things that we simply can't do anymore, and it's important, though, that as we recognize those things that the state can't afford to do anymore, that we mitigate the impact on communities and provide as many shock absorbers as we can, so that as communities take on take back some of the responsibilities that they had before that the state took over, that we give them warning, that they have time to adjust, and that they have money to adjust to it. I won't go much more into that. I'm speaking mostly right now about the four bills in general, that they're part of a package that we put together to cover some of the reductions in the operating budget. It's fairly important that they pass. I would assume that all of them won't pass. We have six or eight bills running through the process in any legislative session. Not everything happens that you want to happen, but we'll figure that out as time goes by. We'll have a lot of input from the communities. We'll have a lot of input from individuals and other legislators, mayors, superintendents, and many other people. Their input is valuable, and I would imagine in some respects it will impact the general direction or maybe the specific directions with inside each of these bills. So with that, Madam Chair, I guess we'll just throw it back to you, and we can start looking at these bills individually.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Kelly. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to speak on the Community Revenue Sharing Program. I was here at the table when that program was created or reestablished. That was at a time when the state of Alaska was flush with revenue, that's why it was called the Revenue Sharing Program. Today, we have very little revenue, and many say that we're drawing quite fast on our reserves. So what we're doing here is trying to look at the program to see what we can do to have that program tighten its belt along with other programs in the state of Alaska, and we are changing it to a community assistance program because I don't know if we have the necessary revenues to continue the program, and we're looking at assisting those communities, primarily smaller communities throughout the state of Alaska that rely heavily upon the program, that may have 80, 90, 95% of their revenues to continue to keep their doors open. Whereas the larger communities, they may only, this program may be less than 5% of their revenue, and they can probably make a better adjustment. So it's acknowledging the financial condition the state of Alaska is in today, and I still support the concept, and I think there is a lot of support for trying to help small communities throughout the state of Alaska in this building, and that is the basis of Senate Bill 210. The state of Alaska continuing to try to assist those communities that need assistance to keep their doors open.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. So, Co-Chairman Kelly.
Madam Chair, I think it's important to comment that many of the people affected by these bills have had a heightened level of concern because they probably didn't have all the information. And a lot of interviews have been done, and people are on record having said one thing or the other. And we just hope today that they'll have more information, that they'll see that it is not our intent to just abdicate any responsibility or anything like that. We want to help the communities as we go through this very difficult time in the state. It is a difficult time. This is a challenge that we're going to meet. We have to meet it together, and we cannot be completely unaware of the needs of the communities and the individuals in the state as we go forward, or that will cause the kind of problems that we're trying to avoid. And so, as I said before, there are shock absorbers built in here, and I hope today when everyone leaves that we'll be able to have a complete discussion on what's in these bills and the motivations behind them and the safeguards that we've put in place to help the communities out as much as we do what we have to do. We have to reduce our budget. We have a $4.1 billion deficit that we're facing, and There's just no way around it. We have to cut. There are going to be some revenue measures, but with all those things considered, that we still have to change the structure of government. That's why the Medicaid bill. That's why the crime bill. That's why these bills that are before you, is that if we just leave the statutes in place, if we just leave the structure in place, we can cut and be very effective at it. We can even raise revenues and be effective at that. But then we'll still have a flawed system in place. And so these bills, along with other ones, attempt to improve the structures that are in place that cause us to spend money that we probably shouldn't spend.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. For the general public's information, we will not be taking public testimony on these bills. Again, we're waiting for the actuarial analysis. Yeah, we will not be taking them today. But we will be introducing each bill, and I'll be asking committee members what you need to evaluate the bill, the impact on local communities, the impact on individual Alaskans. The Senate has said from the get-go, day one at our first press conference, that everything that we do, we will look in multiple ways at the effects of how Alaska's economy, individual communities regionally, individuals in homes or otherwise are affected by any actions that we take, and understand those consequences to the best of our ability. So we will be hearing from the public and giving notice so that the public knows when they can participate on each one of these bills. As always, please email our offices concerns, comments. As Senator Kelly said, we're in some pretty tough times, and we're looking for solutions. So if you're going to criticize a piece of any of the individual legislation, I hope that you'll also point a direction to saving substantial amounts of money, because these suites of bills are potentially addressing about $100 million worth of impact, and we are $4 billion short. That's B with a billion on it. The first bill before the committee is Senate Bill number 207. If I could ask James Armstrong and Brett Huber, just James, to introduce SB 207, an act relating to increasing employer contributions to the defined benefit plan in the teachers' retirement system.
Mr.
Mr. Armstrong, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Yes, James Armstrong, staff to Senator Kelly. I can give you a cursory overview, or I can just go what it does in general until we get the analysis from Buck. I have some preliminary numbers I could share. First, the bill would increase the teacher retirement system rate from its current level of 12.56% to 19% for the next fiscal year, and it would increase it 1% to 20% in FY18, 21% in FY2019, and a final increase to 22% in FY2020. There's some intent language on page 1 of the bill, lines 6 through 8. It says it's the intent to appropriate additional money to school districts annually to mitigate the annual increases to employer costs for the first 5 complete fiscal years of this act. So those factors are currently in the works until we get actual numbers on the actual impacts to each of the, is there 56 school districts? But those will be incorporated, those mitigating factors, into the fiscal note that you'll see whenever we get those runs from Buck. Just it should be noted that since 2008, the state, above and beyond the 12.56, has contributed $1.824 billion to help mitigate the TERS unfunded liability. And that's all I have right now.
Senator Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's very valuable for discussion. Mr. Armstrong just brought it up that in 2008 there was an increase in the BSA to cover TERS obligations. That was about $80 million. That's been 9 years. That's $720 million. 2 years ago, we put $2 billion into the TERS fund to make it, for the unfunded liability, to make it more healthy. Then this year in the budget, we put in 226, was it, James? James?
228
million dollars into the TERS system again to make it more healthy. And as, again, this TERS obligation that is going to the districts, to the communities, is their obligation that we have been carrying. And as we hand back only a portion of it, two things are going on. One, we will hand them back an obligation to a much healthier system because of the big deposits that we've made into the unfunded liability. And two, and it'll be reflected, I hope, in the fiscal note, we'll still haven't exactly figured out the vehicle to carry it, but we will also be mitigating the impact on the communities because we have some money that we will send to the communities through the AADM to cover these increased costs for 5 years. Last year when we talked about reducing the amount of increase to the BSA, there was a lot of consternation from the many districts. And they said, we need time, and we need a way to adjust to any of these increases. And so this is a, this gives them 5 years. I think they asked for 3. Again, it's more anecdotal. Some of them asked for 3. I'm sure some of them asked for another number. But the ones that were talking to me said they needed 3 years. We've given them 5. And during that time, we'll be sending 36.5. It is anticipated we will be sending $36.5 million to the districts to cover those costs, which is a steady amount. And the amount of the percentage increase it is envisioned will go up. Therefore, they'll be taking on a little more of the obligation per year until at the end of the 5-year period, they will have 22%, and then the state will still be picking up the rest of it. Which, how much is that, James, but 10% that the state will be picking up?
Well, if it's, I can walk the committee through our best guess estimates right now and get you through the 5 years, if that's what you would like to do.
And Chair, do you want to wait for the Buck analysis before we do that?
What's the will of the committee? I think that the better numbers might be more appropriate. I believe we have documents available for people to consider. But again, This is a collaborative process with local communities. The state has carried an additional responsibility in a time when we had surplus in our budget, and certainly not something that we enjoy talking about, but this is a responsibility that individual municipalities and communities have taken on in payrolls, and the state finds itself facing a $4 billion hole in searching ways to close that hole. And some of those is bridging costs to those people that are causing the costs. Senator Kelly, I appreciate the notice and the conversation to communities that we're going to have this discussion. I appreciate in the bills that there is time for communities to respond. And I appreciate the services that the communities and the state have been funding for these years. Mr. Armstrong.
Just one more note for people that are watching. The mitigating funds that are discussed in the intent language and that have been discussed at the table will be appropriated using the adjusted average daily membership, which increases local need, which allows the communities to fund to the cap, their education cap. So just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. And I believe Senator Kelly referred to the cash infusion that the state made to TERS of $2 billion a few years back, and that $2 billion was an effort to make that system whole so that those contributions would go down in the future. But for those that are watching at home and those here in the audience, we did a cash infusion of $2 billion. The Senate has proposed another cash infusion, not as illustrious as $2 billion, but again trying to help communities shoulder the burden that the state has been carrying for many years. The Senate Finance Committee needs the buck analysis in regards to SB 207. The health of the overall TERS system, I think, would be good numbers to have for your review. Is there anything else that you need in additional consideration? We can hear from the administration. We can hear from the ARM board itself under PERS. Anything else that you'd like to hear in discussion of this bill? Senator Machicki.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we have to have that, or I'd like to see us have that discussion about whose responsibility it actually is, just to help clarify why the state decided to fund 88% originally, 87.44% originally. Or are we just being nice? And the reason I ask that question is you're going to hear that from the districts and municipalities, that it is in fact our liability, that they've been good enough to pick up part of it, and worthwhile discussion, I think.
Senator Machicki, I believe the administration can help us with that. So Commissioner Fisher should be able to provide some insight into that perspective. Anything else on SB 207? Setting aside SB 207, the next bill before us is SB 208, eliminating Alaska's Performance Scholarship. Mr. Huber, if you would identify yourself for the record and please present SB 208.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Finance Committee. My name is Brett Huber. I'm staff to Senator Kelly. Senate Bill 208, while an important bill and one that's consequential in the education community, is a fairly straightforward bill that proposes to eliminate the Alaska direct state aid for post-secondary scholarships and grants provided through the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program, as well as the Alaska Educational Grant Program. Legislation proposes a wind-down period of 6 years. It will allow those that are in the program now, as well as graduating seniors, the opportunity that are in the process of making application, the opportunity to avail themselves of the program, but then sunset the program in 2022, providing the same type of bridge for families and students that you all have just reflected on for communities and school districts. I'd be happy to run through a brief history of the grant programs if you'd like. If that's not necessary, a sectional, whatever you'd like to hear, Madam Chair.
Why don't you give us the history?
So in 2010, Madam Chairman, thank you. In 2010, Senate Bill 221 was passed. Chapter 14 of Session Laws of Alaska 2010 established the original direct state-funded post-secondary scholarship program as the Alaska Merit Scholarship Program. That was during the 26th legislature. It also established a task force to look at higher ed generally and how to go about funding or what might be appropriate for the future. 2 years following House Bill 104 passed, Chapter 74, Session Laws of Alaska 2012, that renamed the program to the Alaska Performance Scholarship and also put in place a version of the direct state-funded grant program, the Alaska Education Grant. It also created the Higher Education Fund, which is a formula, which is the fund that was set aside and capitalized to fund these two programs. It provided a formula of 7% of market value and a split of two-thirds, one-third between the performance scholarships and the education grant programs. The AG existed under other forms prior to that. In the mid-70s, it was a federally funded, very small grant program, needs-based. Performance scholarship is performance-based. In 2009, there was a multi-year capital budget appropriation of $2.5 million as the funding mechanism that ran through 2012. In 2011, the first year of funding was the first year of application for the Alaska Performance Scholarships. It was first funded with a general fund appropriation in 2012 of $6 million. Beginning in 2013, both the AG and the APS program were funded through the Higher Education Fund. First year saw funding levels at $1 million and $4.9 million for a total of $5.9 million. This year, the Higher Education Funds appropriated to the Alaska Education Grants and the Alaska Performance Scholarships, Madam Chairman, are at $17.332 million. That's $11.5 million and $5.8 million, respectively. The APS funding level should be expected to decrease annually through the sunset date of 2022, and the AEG spend will decrease proportionally for the two-third, one-third rule. The AEG is a needs-based program that students qualify or don't qualify depending on their application on a year-by-year basis. But we thought with the correlation between the performance base and the grant program, it was best to provide that same bridge and same sunset date of 2022. Madam Chairman, if you'd allow me the latitude, I think it's also important to point out that sunsetting these programs provides that direct state aid for post-secondary ed are not a measure of their value. As the other programs you're talking about, you all and the legislature continues to show your commitment to education with over $2 billion in spending this budget, even in light of the $4.1 billion deficit you're facing and the challenges ahead. Madam Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Are there questions from committee members? Would you like a sectional analysis? Mr. Huber, if you walk through real quick a sectional.
Madam Chair, as he's preparing for that, I'd just like to make a comment. Again, it's about the overall work that we're doing here. It's interesting that right now, on the other side of this floor, they're hearing the Medicaid bill, which we hope to get somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million worth of savings. If the 207 is successful, we can get somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 million in savings. If we're successful with the crime bill, which we heard earlier today, we might get somewhere in the neighborhood this year of $10 to $20 million in savings. And by the way, these all have savings in the out year that are much higher. And it seemed there was another one, and it doesn't come to mind right now. But we're talking today, just in the last few hours, about structural changes in bills that are in play and being discussed and being commented on from all over the state of hundreds of millions of dollars of savings. These aren't savings that we have to find every year. If we're successful of putting them in these bills, they'll be wired into the system.
Madam Chairman, would you like me to proceed with the sectional?
Please.
Section 1 removes the statutes which correspond to the repealer found in Section 8 of the bill. sunsetting the Alaska Education Grant Program. That's the 43-400 statutes, and the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program. That's the 43-800 statutes. On July 16th of 2022, the operative language is page 1, lines 9 and 12, and page 2, line 22. Section 2 limits the program to new entrants to the APS to students have graduated by July 15th, 2016. Section 2, the operative language is page 3, lines 4 and 5. Madam Chairman, in a brief discussion I had with the Executive Director of the Commission on Post-Secondary Ed, it's possible that we might need to make a slight language change there to because there's a due diligence period between the statutory deadline and the deadline that the post-secondary ed reviews the applications. So I just want to note that for the committee, that that's something that I'll continue to work with Ms. Behrens. Section 3 of the bill, the operative language is actually on page 4, lines 1 and 2, closes the application period for the Alaska Performance Scholarship to conform with the July 15th deadline found in Section 2. It takes in graduating seniors that are already in the preparatory pipeline. That's the intent of the bill, as well as those that are currently participating in the program. Section 4 of the bill removes the ability to extend the Alaska Performance Scholarship Award beyond the six-year limit. That also conforms to ending the program in the July 2022 time period. Section 5 of the bill, operative language 11, 12, and 13, removes the private school duty to monitor for the APS qualifiers. Currently, all schools in Alaska, be they public or private schools, have the responsibility and to monitor students' progress, monitor their course loads, monitor their and evaluate their grades and provide that information. So it removes that duty from the school, from the private schools. Section 6 of the bill, the operative language between lines 16 and 21, removes the performance scholarship and Alaska Educational Grant from uses of the Higher Education Fund post the July 2020-22 period. So dollars are available from the same fund source through that time, and then we'll close for that fund source after that time period. Section 7 of the bill is the same as Section 5, but for the public school districts, the reporting requirements, monitoring requirements. Section 8 of the bill is the repealer section that removes the statutes for both the AEG and APS as of July 16, 2022. Section 9 of the bill provides applicability language and transitional regulatory authority to the post-secondary ed that allows them to make the changes that are proposed in the legislation. Section 11 of the bill is the retroactivity section, and basically it's in here because the bill passes, becomes law after the date that the program submission deadline closes. It's retroactive again, with the intent of capturing this year's graduating seniors but closing the program following that class. Section 12 repeals is the effective dates. Actually, it's the delayed repeal and sunset. So 1, 5, and 6 take effect on July 16, 2022 when the program closes. And Section 13 is the immediate effective date of the act. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Huber. Are there questions from committee members? Is there any resource that the committee would like to let me know of to present this bill at a later time for additional consideration? We could have Ms. Behrens from Post-Secondary Education come and speak with us. Senator Dunleavy, followed by Senator Machicki.
Just some numbers from the inception of the program might help. How many applied? How many, if there's any completion rate?
Senator Machicki.
I'd actually like to see a full set of numbers since the inception of the program and what the results have been, benefits to Alaska. So I don't know if the university system might, your decision on who might be best suited for delivering that information, but certainly I realize that today we have a $4.1 billion budget gap and we do truly have everything on the table. Part of my understanding is even if this bill passes, is, I mean, it's obviously a very valuable program. Is this something we consider, you know, bringing back someday when we're in a better position? It would help me justify a decision if it's in the positive to support the bill if I understood the results and realized that we may have potential for bringing it back later.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, perhaps I could direct the committee to a sheet that should be in your bill packet from the Alaska Performance Scholarship and Education Grant History. That'll give you some numbers on awards, dollars, recipients, et cetera. The Post-Secondary Education Commission also has a very helpful website and provides the legislature an annual report of the participation in the program and the results of the participants of the program, so I'd be happy to help make that information available.
Thank you, Mr. Huber. We'll hear from the commission, too, and the university. I'm sure that many members of the general public will want to comment on a very valuable program that has benefited many individuals and many families. The overarching concern is a $4 billion overdrawn checkbook and more like $7 billion over 2 years. So, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, part of my understanding, again, these are tough times. We hope they're temporarily tough times. Part of what I'd like to also understand is how many talented young Alaskans we were able to keep in state with this program and what that overall effect is. And again, it gives me the ability for a future look and perhaps an effort to bring this program back when we can afford it. If we don't see the results if we've not seen the value in our investment in the past, we may look at it differently as far as future resurrection of the program if this bill were to pass.
Madam Chairman, Senator Machicki, I understand your viewpoint on that, and I think there's information available. I can tell you roughly about 30% of the graduating seniors have qualified for the performance scholarship. About 40% of them have taken advantage of that performance scholarship, but I'm certain the Commission on Post-Secondary Ed will be able to provide additional information. Also point out that the program repealers don't take effect until July 1, 2022, which does provide a period where you will not have new entrants at a time when you're addressing your fiscal issues that you are today, but where those statutes remain in place and could then be extended with future legislation should that be the will of the legislature at that time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop.
I don't know if this is the right time, but I could be out of bounds, but I just want to make a comment. We still have a program of pick, click, and give for college savings through our PFD that captures all students. So it's not that I'm unsympathetic, but that tool is still out there. And I know from myself, that's how we save for our kids' college education, and now I'm saving for my grandkids' college education with that same tool that's out there in the toolbox.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Kelly.
Just a little more information, too, on how the state is still able to address its better students and provide an education for them. The Alaska Scholarship Program that the university runs, which is funded by the University Trust, still operates and gives scholarships to the top 10% of each class.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Any further information before we set Senate Bill 208 aside? With that, the next bill before the committee is Senate Bill 209.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Huber. Senate Bill 209, an act relating to increasing employer contribution to the defined benefit plan in the Public Employees Retirement System of Alaska. Ms. Kramer, if you'd identify yourself for the record and present SB 209.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Laura Kramer, staff to Senator McKinnon and the Senate Finance Committee. Before you, Senate Bill 209 increases the contribution for the Public Employees Retirement System In 2017, it would increase by 2.5% from 22% to 24.5%. In fiscal year 2018, it would go up an additional 1%, and in fiscal year 2019, an additional 1%. That's the substance of the bill, Madam Chair.
Are there questions from committee members? There are only three sections. Would you like a rollout of the three sections? I believe it's been covered. Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, as we've discussed this in past legislative sessions, one of, and I'm trying to drag up from memory a little bit here, but so if I'm wrong, please let me know. Won't be the first time. When we initiated the 22%, was it a period of time when our obligation under the unfunded liability was somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 billion? And then everything changed in 2009, 2008, when the stock market fell, and we went from a $4 billion unfunded liability to a $15 billion unfunded liability. So we were told when we were discussing this in years past that it was a deal somehow, and that a deal is a deal. But the environment in which that deal was made changed dramatically in the stock market crash in 2009.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. What information does the committee need to evaluate the proposed idea in Senate Bill 209? Senator Michicki.
Just a couple things, Madam Chair. One is just the history of what got us to Senate Bill 125 in 2008, just the history of what the state contributed to municipalities prior to that point. And then I have just another concern. It's really understanding that the true rate currently we contribute 22%, but that includes the defined contribution plan portion.
Senator Michicki, if I could, yes. That's a cap, and so we cover above the 22%, so municipalities cover that 22%. I know you know that. Just wanted to be clear on the record.
I should have stated that differently. In getting to the true rate, I'd like to know what happens to the defined contribution plan piece. So when we say that we're increasing from 22 to the city's contributing 24.5, is that going to be all in, or is it going to be somewhat higher than that? Because with their defined contribution rate, that could be well over 30%. So just want to understand what we're really looking at for an all-in cost from municipalities.
So we're looking here from the ARM board to help us do that. We need to hear from Buck on the actuary analysis. Ms. Kramer?
Senator Michicki, through the chair, the way that the system is structured is all employees are covered. So all the contribution that's made on the behalf of the employees includes the defined benefit and the defined contribution. They don't differentiate between the two different plans. It's a percentage that the municipality pays. That's their percentage based on all of their employees. But we can have a more thorough discussion with the ARM board and others if you'd like.
Senator Michicki, earlier today I met with the finance director at Teal, and he gave an example, and hopefully I'll get it right. He's sitting behind me, that if an average employee made $100,000 under Tier 1, if the cash call into the system was, say, 36%, then we would contribute $36,000. I think I'm getting that right. And if you had a new employee that was making $100,000 under the defined contribution plan, then it might be $12,000. And so that would create a disadvantage. And so the system looks at employees as a whole so that all employees are treated equitably and fairly when they go to apply for a job. So those numbers might be available, but it would be unfair for the new employee to outpace the older employee in the system. And if I didn't get that exactly right, Senator Kelly? Senator Michiki.
So, you know, we're getting a lot, we all have municipalities in our districts, and we're getting a lot of emails, and just my primary goal is making sure that we clarify the burden in a way that if municipalities are going to be upset with us, it should be on a real number and a real percentage, as opposed to something that's not laid out on the table very transparently about what that cost will be. So that's my primary goal, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We'll work with Buck. We'll work with the administration. We'll work with the ARM board so that we can thoroughly understand the finances. Senator Hoffman, followed by Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe Buck will be able to provide us this information, but of all the municipalities, what are the annual costs over the course of the five-year increment? And the other question that I would like to have answered is, we know that municipalities are in PERS, but I would like to see what other quasi-governmental agencies in the state of Alaska participate in this program.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Dunleavy.
School districts. And if you can go back, if you're going to go back a decade, if it's not that much trouble, just go back to the inception, because I think you'll see a number of different changes throughout. For example, in the 90s, there was a change in contribution rates, and there may have been prior to that as well. So just given the history, but also if you're going to do the municipalities, any entity, as Senator Hoffman said, and I'll leave it at that. I was going to say, I know you can run hypotheticals for school districts on what this bill would actually do to their increase. We've done that before, but if that's an issue, I guess we can not request that, but if it can be done fairly easily, it might be valuable to take a look at.
Thank you for that. Other agencies that are participating in the unfunded liability, I think we've had Aerospace speak to us with a small liability. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation has a liability that they're carrying. So some of those, what I call enterprise agencies at the state level, are also participating in the program and carrying those. We had a new general accounting rule that just went in effect, and so municipalities are working through having to carry this portion of the debt on their balance sheets also, and understanding that. So understanding what they're facing as a former mayor, Senator Michiki, I know that that everyone is interested, but you probably have a particular a vantage point that others might not have. I served on a local assembly, so we certainly understand those mill rates and the connections there. We certainly will be working with AML and others that are affected by this, and hopefully, as you've stated earlier, that they can understand what we're doing as a suite of bills versus individual, because these bills are interrelated in trying to create notice of a change in how we're going to have to do business at a state level, time to respond to that, and a shared responsibility and opportunity for success of all those programs. Senator Kelly, followed by Senator Michiki.
Madam Chair, you had mentioned how they were all interrelated, and I don't think that we made the connection between the higher Governor's Scholarship, the Performance Scholarship, and what we're doing here. And it's from that pot of money that we will use that money as the shock absorber to the communities on the TERS bill.
Senator Kelly, I think that's valuable. You sometimes are hard to pick up on a microphone, and so if I might restate that, Senate Bill 207 and Senate Bill 208 are linked in an effort to take a one-time funding source and provide a bridge to the teacher's retirement system as a shock absorber, trying to provide that time and that bridge money available from those one-time money sources. Senator Michiki.
You know, Madam Chair, I supported this coming directly to finance because this is all a financial exercise. In part of our evaluation, though, not everyone can brag $16 million surplus last year, right? Some of the municipalities are on the edge. And I'm trying to think of a way that we can sort of capture those municipalities that are perhaps at their limit. And my fear is if we don't consider some sort of relief for some of those marginal municipalities that the state may sort of inherit that municipal responsibility. So I'm wondering how we can best research that as we're going through this, just understand or identify who those municipalities may be and if we should think about some sort of relief mechanism in this bill as well.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. So Senate Bill 209 and Senate Bill 210 are interrelated in its goal of trying to provide some of that bridge, again, time and shared responsibility. But anything else on 209 rollout that the committee needs for consideration? And again, for the general public, we're not taking public testimony today, but we will notice that properly. So Alaskans can have an opportunity to participate on each of these bills. The next bill before the committee is SB 210, an act relating to the Community Revenue Sharing Program, changing the name of Community Revenue Sharing to Community Assistance Program and relating to municipal property tax exemptions on the residence of a senior or disabled veteran and a widow or widower of a senior or disabled veteran. Ms. Kramer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Laura Kramer, staff to Senator McKinnon. Senate Bill 210, as you just stated, by reading the title, makes a couple of changes. It changes the Community Revenue Sharing Program name to Community Assistance, and it removes from mandatory statute and places into optional statute the senior and disabled veteran property tax exemption for local communities. Essentially, what this legislation does is under the Community Assistance Program, as it is now, the legislature has the ability to appropriate funds to the program. They would continue to have that opportunity. However, the way the bill is structured right now, it would eliminate after 2018. But again, that is a decision by this committee and the legislature to appropriate more funds to continue the assistance beyond 2018. As far as the property tax exemption is concerned, like I stated, this would be on local governments to determine how they want to offer property tax exemptions to their citizens. They can structure it however they so choose. We've removed the dollar amount, the $150,000 that was in statute, and like I said, removed it from mandatory and made it optional. I'm happy to walk through a sectional analysis if the committee would like.
Ms. Kramer, if you would walk through a sectional analysis on SB 210.
Section 1 updates statute, and this is reflecting the repeal of the property tax exemption, and it places the definition of disabled veteran into the optional statute. So you'll see many changes throughout the legislation, from changing the name of the Community Revenue Sharing Program to Community Assistance, and also the repeal of mandatory statute and placing those items into optional. So Section 2 updates the program name change of Community Revenue Sharing to Community Assistance. Section 3 does the same. Section 4 is reflecting the repeal of the property tax exemption and placing this into optional statute. Section 5 also removes repealed language that was in mandatory statute and places this in optional, having to do with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development adopting regulations to implement the exemption. Section 6 updates, again, this is updating the repeal of mandatory statute for the property tax exemption. This is placing the definition of widow or widower in the optional statute. Section 7 is amends statute allowing a municipality to exempt real property from taxation, making it optional. Section 8, this is the placement of the disabled veteran into the optional statute, the definition of disabled veteran. Section 9 removes repealed language from mandatory into optional. Section 10 updates the community revenue sharing name to community assistance. Section 11 does the same. Section 12 also updates the name of the program in statute and reduces the minimum balance to 15 million. Section 13 updates the program name change again and directs the department to reduce the basic amount pro rata if the fund balance is less than $15 million. Section 14 updates the program name change to community assistance. Section 15 and 16 are the same. Section 17 adds the community assistance program to the definition of state money. Section 18, this is an update to the program name change. Section 19 adds the community assistance program to AS 3610-125C. This is employment preference statute. Section 20 adds the community assistance program to the definition of state money. This is the Alaska product preference. Section 21 adds community assistance program to statute requiring the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development to administer the program. Section 22 updates the program name change to community assistance. Section 23 is the repealer section. This repeals mandatory statutes for the property tax exemption.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Are there questions from committee members? What type of additional information does the committee need for Senate Bill 2010 for consideration? We can get you FY16, the Community Revenue Sharing Program as it currently exists. The numbers that are projected as the system is ramping down under current Alaska state statute, not being recharged. Are there other, we can reach out to local communities so that we can hear specific needs of smaller communities and how they're utilizing those funds. I know that we've heard that before in public testimony over the operating budget this session already. Anything else? Thank you, Ms. Kramer, for that rollout. Is there anything else to come before the committee today? I'd like to close and hear comments from committee members if you so desire, but I'd like to close today's meeting with the state's facing some pretty tough times. $4 billion is a lot of money, and I've heard one constituent talk about that $4 billion in a way that is sometimes confusing to some and sometimes provides more clarity, and that is $4 billion equals $1 million. Senator Kelly, you've talked about what a million is in relation to a billion. Can you share that with in seconds for the people to understand the magnitude of the issue that we're facing today?
I'll have to speak in real round numbers because I don't remember exactly, but a million seconds ago was like last Tuesday. A billion seconds ago was sometime in the 80s. And a trillion seconds ago, if you want to shift to federal problems, a trillion seconds ago was 30,000 BC.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. And the reason I asked Senator Kelly to share that is that for one Alaskan, $1 million is something that I haven't seen personally stacked up in bills or in my bank account ever. And this suite of bills is attempting to address, you know, a huge hole in Alaska's budget. And it is a suite of bills that work together, and there is criticism to be had for any of the bills individually. But our goal is, taken as a whole, that these bills will provide an opportunity for communities to understand the magnitude of the problem that the state is facing. Again, the time so that we can respond together to those with as little impact as possible to those communities, and that we share those responsibilities and those opportunities together. We are trying to address a long-term fiscal problem that is not structurally sound for the state. The state cannot continue to bear the cost above 22 or 12.56% when those costs are in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and the cash call on the state before it was changed in previous legislative sessions was almost $1 billion annually. So we just don't have the funds to continue to invest the same way that we have in the past. Again, we are $4 billion short. This is not a new conversation to local communities or to AML. We have had people at this table before asking for us to change the shall on the personal property tax exemption to may at those microphones before me today, so that according to our Constitution, local control and self-determination should be had at a local level. Senator Kelly, SB 207 and 208 uses the Alaska Scholars Program to bridge that on the TERS system. And on the PERS system, we're trying to use the tax exemption as the bridge and an opportunity for local control on those programs. And we'll be looking at revenue assistance in a scope on both the larger communities and smaller communities and understanding those impacts. Please know that the caps that are being proposed today for changes do not meet the expenses that will be asked for of the state. The state will still continue to present and be asked to pay above and beyond those percentages depending on what's happening with the system. And the Senate Finance Committee specifically has made a recommendation that was agreed to by full finance to invest more into these systems in a cash infusion to try to make the system function at a higher level than it has in the past. Is there additional comments from committee members? Seeing that we're almost adjourned. On Wednesday, March 30th, 2016, here in the Finance Committee Room 532 at 9 a.m., we'll be hearing from Dr. Gunnar Knapp, the Director and Professor of Economics at ICER, UAA. We'll have SB 114, the Permanent Fund Earnings Deposit, before us, as well as SB 128, Permanent Fund Deposit Dividend Earnings. In the afternoon, we'll have at 1 o'clock, we'll have Senate Bill 91, the Omnibus Crime Bill. We'll be taking up pretrial and sentencing. It will be invited testimony only for the Omnibus Crime Bill. On Thursday, we'll be back in the morning on the Permanent Fund Earnings. With that, the schedule is posted. Just wanted to make sure everybody knew. And we will post, I'm guessing for next week, a public hearing on the finance package bills that we had before us today. But that will be available Thursday, if not earlier. With that, we're adjourned.